Welcome to the J3 University Podcast. I'm your host, John Jewett.
And I'm your co-host, Luke Miller.
Our mission is to elevate the physique coaching standard
and deliver the highest level of competitors to the stage.
Let's jump into today's episode. Bodybuilding and babies. So this is the topic for today. And what one that Luke and I get so often is around fertility and bodybuilding. And how do we manage this fertility while we're going to be pursuing our bodybuilding goals? At some point, we don't want to just grow muscles. We also want to grow a baby. And so we have covered this fully now. We have a whole lecture now dedicated to it in our level one course that Luke put together, not only on fertility management, but also all side effects that could be occurring from PED usage with acne or hair loss, which I know nothing about evidently, or I know a lot about because I went through it, right? But Luke has also gone through the fertility process and now has a beautiful baby girl. And this is after he has pursued his bodybuilding career and journey through that. So I thought Luke was a great person to teach this lecture since I don't have any children except furry children, which are dogs and cats, which don't count, I guess. So Luke, we're going to dive into fertility. And I think what should kick this off probably is just with bodybuilding, and we're primarily getting to the enhanced steroid using bodybuilder. What risks are we posing around our fertility?
Yeah, I think it's honestly just a blunt conversation to be had upon hopefully initially voyaging into PED use, right? Like hopefully someone in your corner or your coach is just talking about, you know, there is diverging goal sets when it comes to bodybuilding and fertility, and they don't align. They're on the exact opposite ends of the spectrum when we talk about trying to drive adaptations for one or the other, right? It'd be like doing ultra marathon running while trying to do hypertrophy training for those kind of want to compare it to something else, right? As a good example. And so with that, I think it's an understanding that just general PED use is going to downregulate, hypothalamic pituitary signaling, which is going to downregulate LH and FSH, which is then going to downregulate the process of spermatogenesis. You know, that's going to be plugging in anything from clinical TRT all the way up into superphysiological PED use. Now, level of exposure, duration of exposure are all going to be things that we need to discuss within this realm. But if we can just set the basis as, look, this is going to be a negative for fertility when it comes to PED use. If you want to pursue fertility, it's going to be a negative for tissue retention once you get to a certain point in your career. There is a happy medium that doesn't optimize either process, and we'll certainly bring that up. But I think it's good to kind of dive into, you know, why I think the underpinning of this conversation is just expectation management first before you actually get into why that is. Because as a coach, you can't expect to optimize the process for fertility, but be an Olympian at the same time. And I do think that comes across our table quite a bit of like, hey, you know, I want to be as good of a physique competitor as I can be, but also like, I want kids, right? It's like, well, the risk is always going to be there that that might not potentially come back, but there is a process of potentially restoring that that we'll cover today. But would you agree that expectation management before you dive into any of it is probably the biggest conversation to have with everyone that you kind of work with?
It is, and it's a hard one to swallow, and especially depending on the age of when you're getting into this. Because I was like 25, 26 when I started bodybuilding, which is much different than being like 19 or 20 when you start bodybuilding. And for one, even caring to ask those questions, or the right. A little bit older individual that does care to ask. And it's a tough one because you're asking what is the potential of something happening when there's such a just a vast inter-individual response to all these components. It's really like, hey, Luke, could you look at the crystal ball and see what is my side effect profile going to look like? And what does that look like in the next 20 years? And there's just a huge question mark around it. So we can't give definites. So to map out even the beginning of like, what is the expectation? Well, here's like the really extreme, right, of it, where we have people that can have kids and they have to go as far as like in vitro fertilization, or you have other guys that's been using steroids and is like, you know, deep in some like growth phase and all of a sudden surprisingly has a pregnancy occur. And so like the profile across these individuals just varies. So it's hard to set expectations, but I think you just have to be aware that this is going to lie on a spectrum. And also the older you are and the longer you pursue this, probably the greater risk you're going to have in incurring some of these side effects amongst all of them. But I think you bring up a point that these are opposing goals. So if having children is that important to you, you know, that's something that's going to impact you for the rest of your life, hopefully in a very positive way, while bodybuilding is a very short duration of your life. So you might have to weigh out that pursuing just being the most fertile man might be the better option, or being the largest bodybuilding man on the planet.
Right.
And so you have to, you know, kind of weigh out these options, but it's like, I want my cake and eat it too. Right. So, hey, I don't want to go bald. I want a full head of hair. I want beautiful skin. I want to live to be 100 years old, and I want 10 children. It's like, well, you might have to make some sacrifices here, as this expectation just might not be the reality.
Oh man. Yeah. On top of that, I want to run and own 5 businesses so that I'm just a multimillionaire, so that, and I'll sleep 10 hours a night. That's the expectation. Right. But no, look, and there's workarounds, right? And I think a workaround before we get into like the actual, like, okay, well then what is my options, is like potentially saving for a guy's perspective, saving your sperm into a sperm bank. It's like 50, 60 bucks a month. It's not too shabby, as long as like your significant other is cool with potentially going through the process of artificial insemination or IVF. As someone who's spoken from experience from IVF, that can be a pretty brutal experience for the female in the equation. So it's definitely a conversation to be had, but that is an option where you can kind of go down that path of bodybuilding. And once you do either restore fertility or store it before you even take that away, you've got that kind of backup plan in case restoration doesn't happen as quickly as you want. And then I think that kind of leads into the conversation of like, okay, well then let's say I go down the path of accepting the risk, because this is where most people fall, right? People, they accept the risk, but what does it look like if the fertility process wants to happen? And you brought up a point of like, do I run HCG with my superphysiological cycles or what do I do? Right. And I think least intervention up is the best way to talk about this. Depending on where you're at in your bodybuilding journey, time is an option. There is an evidence, like, and it's in the lecture about like they congregated like 30 male contraceptive studies, and we saw 100% restoration after 24 months. So after 2 years, we saw 100% restoration of this process of spermatogenesis and fertile ability within these males. And that's just evidence that potentially stepping away from PED usage and potentially stepping away from bodybuilding for a long duration of time could lead you to just restoring it back naturally. Now, it's not going to be the case for most.
Like, were those like actual like steroid users, or was that TRT?
It was contraceptive studies. So it was basically anything that fell under the realm of shutting down hypothalamic pituitary axis. So, and there was like rate. So like at the 6 month mark, we had 90%, at the 12 month mark, we had 90% restoration. So it's like 90% of the population is going to restore at the 1 year mark. So it's not like you're having to wait 2 years for everyone. So that is going to be an option. I think the point to make with that and with going into the intervention realm is that it's going to set aside the bodybuilding goals, which then kind of brings us to the age old question, which I want you to kick off with some of the considerations, is can I just run HCG alongside the PEDs and be good?
Thanks everyone for tuning in to today's podcast. Are you struggling to hit your peak on show day? Feeling lost in the off season? Upgrade your coaching game with J3 University. Our program covers everything from off season to contest prep to peak week, all based from real client results. Along with our comprehensive physique curriculum, you'll also get access to our forums with our J3U team to answer any questions you have, and live Q&A sessions to further your coaching and athlete experience. experience. We are the source of education for top IFBB pros and coaches. Join us to elevate the coaching standard at J3 University. Let's get back to today's podcast. Right. Yeah. That, I think when people start bringing PDs of like, how should I set up this design to get a bit of both, right? I want some growth to happen, but I also want some fertility to be maintained, is that people get into suboptimal stack design where you're kind of doing just a half-assed job of each one. And I think this is when people lead into like, I'm going to use SARMs as my first like baby step introduction. Baby step, that wasn't a pun either. I'm here for the jokes. That's it. No. So like, oh, I'll use a SARM, right? So this won't potentially shut down testosterone production and I'll get some gains. And then I won't have this as much of this issue. But where this lies you is like, well, okay, you're also not getting any like physiological levels of estradiol, which is also really poor for health. Then at working doses is for SARMs to actually go beyond what your natural testosterone production would be to promote growth, that amount of SARM, you'd have to do an amount that actually would still shut you down. And that's why there's still not a really great SARM option out there. So you're still running into the issue of shutting down the HPTA axis and having this detriment to fertility. So some of these like suboptimal approaches really are not the best for utilizing and maintaining your fertility. Or there's even the idea, I think, of, well, I'll just go on and off, right? Which, going back to some level of restoring my sperm production, then that should maintain a little better over time. But then you're also doing this kind of one foot in, one foot out approach with, at some point your progress will be dropping off during this restoration phase. And then you'll have to gain some back during your next cycle. And eventually you're going to get to a point where you're kind of meeting this maintenance mode where you're not seeing progress continue to happen. And that also doesn't ensure that it's even maintaining fertility, as there's no evidence to really support that either. So I think let's push those aside, right? Because I don't, that's why I don't recommend it for when I'm like, go all in and bodybuilding.
Yeah. Agreed. And I would just, cause like the counter argument to that is typically the paper that cites, like, I think it's 200 mgs per week with 500 IUs or 1,000 IUs HCG every other day. And we saw like I think it was like a 30 or a 40% spermatogenesis rate. I'd have to go recheck the paper, but there's a paper that's like looking at these clinical TRT studies, right? And seeing spermatogenesis maintenance with HCG usage alongside clinical TRT usage. And this is the paper that cited as the counter argument. But if you read the paper in full, they cite that the time duration of the study potentially wasn't long enough to see FSH downregulation fully, where you're potentially not seeing the negative ramifications on the maturation of sperm, where that would then lead to problems with getting pregnant. And so there is some like underlying level of understanding that even with clinical TRT over time, like there's going to be the restoration process that's going to stimulate both LH and FSH that's going to have to occur. Bodybuilding is going to be the same way. You just, when you look at that paper, the time scale is important to understand because it's not exactly evidence, in my opinion, even though it partially is. It kind of then starts to lead to, okay, well, then what does this look like if I do dive in? Because I do think, like you said, that's the best option of like just go gung ho one way or the other.
And with bringing up like we talked earlier, like how does fertility and sperm production, like what does that process really lead to happen? And the pituitary is going to be releasing luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. And truly both are needed to be at the best fertility spot you can be. That follicle stimulating hormone is actually what causes the development and maturation of sperm. While luteinizing hormone has more of this aspect around intratesticular testosterone level increase, which is important as well. But it's really FSH that has this larger role. And HCG is mimicking LH, luteinizing hormone. So you're not getting this FSH component that's also needed alongside LH when you're only using HCG and your TRT or your, you know, super physiological steroid usage. So a lot of guys will be implementing HMG, which mimics FSH. And that's when a lot of people really say, oh man, I got my spouse pregnant at, when I had both in combination. So back to the point of using HCG along your cycle, it's like, yeah, maybe this does maintain a degree of spermatogenesis, but we don't have the data long-term to say that this is going to be maintained. But also, what is the quality of that sperm going to be? Because you don't have the HMG component alongside. I know people are probably thinking like, ah, well, they're getting to the point of you need to run HCG and HMG together throughout your bodybuilding career. And I don't believe that's the answer too, because we also don't have the evidence of that being the case either.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So let's like dive into like what this actually looks like, because, you know, you guys can get in level one and look at all the papers that I have in there for that lecture and just kind of like the ramifications of usage for HCG and Clomid and HMG. Like there's so much in there to look at, but I think like assuming you go down the path of just kind of diving in and you do your bodybuilding career and then it's time to hang it up. And like the excitement is just so overwhelming that like they do their last PID Monday and then they plug in the HCG or the HMG or whatever they're deciding to plug in on Wednesday. It's like, that might not be the best way to go about this. And, I think it's if you can come to the acceptance that, okay, I'm going to devote everything I have to this fertility process, get pregnant, and then potentially either fully step away from bodybuilding or come back to it, then it allows you to fully dive into the fertility process. Because I mean, you're looking at 90-ish days to go through the full cycle of like sperm plus or minus. It's like 74 days for spermatogenesis and then 1 to 21 for maturation, depending on where we're at and just what that process looks like for that individual. So, I mean, you're looking at minimum 3 to 4 months for someone, right? And so, I do think that people jump the gun and kind of not go into the fertility process the way it needs to happen. And I know that this is something that you had actually pulled a paper on this, that kind of spoke to why we wouldn't do that as well.
You said something, Luke, that it takes 3 months to, sorry, state that again.
So like going through like the spermatogenesis cycle of like restoring spermatogenesis, getting sperm production back up to probably close to that 15 parts per million, and going through the maturation process, we're looking at around 90 days for most people.
Okay, so get back to actual like a sperm that has actually developed fully and able to reach that potential for fertility.
Yeah, there's like a two-part process. It's like 70 to 74 days for the first step. And then depending on how long that maturation motility aspect goes, you're looking 1 to 21 days. So ballparking 90 days, right? It's not going to be exact. But that's where it's like patience with that process is so huge. Because even if you're using stuff to stimulate this you know, LH and FSH production back, it's still going to have to go through the maturation process depending on how, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? How much you've suppressed that in the actual output, right?
And I ask that again because then you need to factor in the time of what were you just previously doing, right? Because you before the podcast, we're talking that as long as there's some impedance that's causing the HPTA to not output LH and FSH. So if you're on 2,000 milligrams of, you know, tests per week or TRT, as long as there's something that's impeding that LH, FSH signal, your Clomid or your HCG, HMG is not going to be working the same. So you need time for these to come back into a physiological norm, which some of these esters could take 5 to 6 weeks before you even get to that state where then your other fertility compounds you're using would have aspects to bring about the sperm production. Then from what Luke is saying here, you have this other 90 days to even get back to an optimal sperm level. So there's a big time commitment here. I mean, you're talking 5 to 6 months potentially. So I think patience is going to be key within this process.
Yep. Yeah. And it's where like fully diving into it and just accepting the fact that you're having to sit it to the side is where you create the best outcomes for fertility. And I think, and just as like a non-coaching consideration, like it's worth it to your significant other if you're going to go down that process with them to give them everything as well, where you're taking this time to devote back into them for potentially something you both want or something the significant other wants or hopefully it's what you both want. But the point being here is if you do decide to come back, then it's a little bit easier to give back because you were giving to them. And this process of life, like your circle is so close. Your close circle is so important that like you have to take care of them. And I think it's easy from a bodybuilder's perspective to like not want to go through it even if it is a goal, because they've only got bodybuilding on the mind. But you have that point of like, you know, bodybuilding is such a short portion of your life where kids are pretty much forever. And so it's, you know, what's 6-9 months versus the next 60 years, right? So it's hard to see it in the short term, but then you step back and look at it in the long term. And I say this from a place of I struggled with this. It can really start to improve your outcomes because there are psychological considerations for fertility as well, as far as like potentially having negative ramifications for that, and being able to fully buy into that process.
Well, I think that's covers it as good as we can within our podcast, yep. But it's a much bigger topic to cover and why we have a full lecture on this material and a little bit more diving into finally getting some actual recommendations on a framework of protocols to be utilizing. So if y'all are interested in those, please dive into our level one course where we bring up these issues around fertility and other things around side effect management. But we will cut off here for today, guys. And thank you all for listening and tuning in. And we will talk to you next time.